Today is the appearance day of Lochan Das Thakur. And I'm really grateful that they asked me to speak on this day because I did a little research about this great devotee. It gave me a lot of pleasure. It really gave me a lot of pleasure. I mean, we kind of take for granted some, at least I take for granted sometimes, some of the songs that we hear, some of the things that we do in our regular practice. And when we find out a little more about the people behind them and the story behind them, I can't see you. I need your association. I can't see. I'll read just a little bit about this great devotee, make sure I don't leave anything out. I'm a simple devotee. I have had faith in my guru since I met him, and that's really all I need. And so a lot of times I don't always quote slokas that I should, remember details. It's hard for me to remember things. But I remember the instructions that my guru gives me. And I want to make sure I don't leave anything out. So I'll tell you a little bit about Lochan Das Thakur. He was a disciple of Sri Narahari Sarakara Thakur, who was a dear associate of Lord Gauraraya. Lochan Das Thakur wrote Chaitanya Mangala, which tells the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, which were not necessarily revealed by Vrindavan Das Thakur or Krishna Das Kaviraj. And this will tie into very well with the verse that we're talking about today, which is a nice arrangement by Krishna. Sri Lochan Das Thakur was a very humble devotee. He was arranged to be married at a very young age. And they were really just children. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki. A little insight into the mentality of this devotee. As was the practice in those days, he was married at a very young age, just as a boy, to a very young girl. And the practice was that he was then sent off to Gurukul to study under the guidance of his spiritual master. At a later point, when they have grown to the appropriate age, then they would reunite. But interestingly enough, you know, a lot of us in material life, we would think, oh, this is great. I have a great wife. I don't have to worry about anything. I have a great wife. But his mentality was focused on his spiritual master. And by the time he reached the age of reuniting with his wife, he didn't really want to leave the Gurukul or the association of his spiritual master. He was so attached to the guidance that he was receiving. And that's an important point. It's not just that we're attached to our spiritual master, we're attached to Krishna. We've just forgotten. And we're trying desperately to regain that attachment to Krishna. When someone gives us proper guidance and we begin to feel that attachment again, of course we're going to be attached to our spiritual master. Someone was asking me the other day about finding a spiritual master and the process. And it's in the beginning, maybe we're just looking for, in my case, I just wanted a cool name at first. I wanted a new name. And then after that, I evolved to the point where I really wanted a guru. And eventually, I gave up on wanting a guru, and I started to beg Krishna just someone would teach me the right things. Someone would give me guidance. And when I stopped asking for a guru, when I stopped asking for a spiritual master and just was asking for guidance, then I was put in the same place with my spiritual master. That's the way that it happened. And I became extremely attached to him because from the very first meeting, I learned faith from him. I didn't have faith, but I learned it from the very first meeting. And I have trusted him ever since that he is actually guiding me in the way of Krishna consciousness. So Lochan Das Thakur was very attached to his spiritual master. And the father and mother of the young girl that he was married to began complaining and asking for his spiritual master to send him back to fulfill his duties as a householder. And so he did. He followed his duty and he went back to the town where he was married as a child. But he didn't remember how to find their house. It had been so long. And he came across a woman who was collecting water. And because of the teachings of his spiritual master and out of respect for her, he approached her as mother. Mataji, can you please direct me to this house? And he had this in his heart. He was raised properly and he had this respect for her as his mother. And she guided him to the house. And while he was there, speaking with the parents of his wife, they were excited that he had come, and they were thanking him for coming. And, oh, here comes our daughter now. She's coming now. And as she walked through the door carrying water, he realized that this was the woman that he had met on the way. This was, in fact, his wife. However, on first sight, his first thought of her was as his mother. He had already given this to her in his heart. He had addressed her as mother. And so he explained that he could never change that feeling. He had addressed her with such respect as his mother. He could never look at her as anything else. This was the purity of his heart. This was the strength of the teachings that one gets from the spiritual master. He wasn't being naughty. He wasn't being facetious. He just had such respect for her, he could never assume anything else. And eventually, he tried to fulfill his duty, but eventually, mother and father of the bride just said, maybe you should just go back to the ashram with your guru. And they released him from the duty, where he spent his life married to Krishna and serving his dear guru. And an insight into the way that he felt for his guru is in some of the words in his songs. He says, my hope of hopes is to be near the lotus feet of Sri Narottam Das Thakur and serve him with my very life. The cherished desire of the fallen Lochan Das is to be allowed by Narahari's grace to sing the glories of Lord Gauranga. My Lord is Sri Narahari Thakur. I am his servant. Bowing before him, I beg for his service. This is my only aspiration. That is from Chaitanya Mangala. So he was asked to narrate the life and the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in a way that hadn't previously been done. And it wasn't in a deep philosophical way. He wasn't having long discussions with pandits. He was asked to do this in poetry. He was asked to do this in a poetic, beautiful way. And he had a beautiful talent for composing music. The reason was so that the common man could feel the emotion of Lord Chaitanya. So sometimes we think emotion, we're not supposed to be emotional. We should be very practical. But this was his assignment. Through music, we see when we go out on kirtan, on Harinam, and we're singing, there's times when people don't even know what the words are we're singing. I've done Harinam in different countries, and people don't know the language we're speaking, let alone that it's Sanskrit or that we're singing about Krishna. But people are touched. It's emotional. Even animals feel this. This is very important. Love that we have for Krishna invokes deep emotion within our heart. So this was his purpose. As devotees regularly chant, their devotional emotion is awakened, and they begin to feel this need for Krishna. This is a cyclic phenomenon. If we can just bring someone to the temple and do some service, if we can convince someone to come and just help with prasadam service or sweep the floor or do some service just because it feels good, their bhakti, their emotional desire for Krishna will be awakened. And as this emotion, as this bhakti is awakened within them, they will have a stronger desire to do service. And this is the cycle. And then it goes back and forth. Those of us that are already here and are practicing, when we hear these songs, I have to admit, I don't know the words to a lot of the songs that we hear, a lot of devotional songs. I know the words, I can repeat them and sing them, but I may not necessarily know the deep interpretation of a lot of these words, but the emotion and the feeling is there. So if we study a little more and we learn the definitions, then our love and emotion has increased even more. So this is very important, very important. So he was a great songwriter, and we have a lot to thank him for. We owe a lot to his desire to serve his guru in this way. He followed faithfully the orders of his spiritual master, and he put his heart and soul into his music, and now that is passed down to us, and we can feel that as well. If we had a few hours to do kirtan today, we could sing one after another of his songs and talk about them, but we don't have that much time, so I'll let you off the hook. So today's verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 51. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Thereafter, O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharatas, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead became the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they maintained continuous, unswerving devotional love and parental affection. And in their association, all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopas and gopis, developed the culture of Krishna bhakti. Purport. Although when the Supreme Personality of Godhead stole the butter, curd, and milk of the neighboring gopas and gopis, this teasing superficially seemed troublesome. In fact, it was an exchange of affection in the ecstasy of devotional service. The more the gopas and gopis exchanged feelings with the Lord, the more their devotional service increased. Sometimes we may superficially see that a devotee is in difficulty because of being engaged in devotional service, but the fact is different. When a devotee suffers for Krishna, that suffering is transcendental enjoyment. Unless one becomes a devotee, this cannot be understood. When Krishna exhibited his childhood pastimes, not only did Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda increase their devotional affection, but those in their association also increased in devotional service. In other words, persons who follow the activities of Vrindavan will also develop devotional service in the highest perfection. Om Jnana Timirandasya Ginanjana Shalakya Chaksurun Militam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Krishna was a problem child. He caused so much distress. Seems to distress. And yet, that's our favorite topics. We, as devotees, we love to talk about these little the mischief that Krishna created. It increased the love in the devotees. So, he's increasing their emotion, their love for him. This is an important part. Important part of love. Why? Why do we need love? What? Well, the greatest symptom of love is the overwhelming desire to serve the object of our love. When we love someone, we are compelled to serve them. And that's who we really are. We're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and we are here so that he can enjoy us and we can enjoy him. We're part of him. We are meant to enjoy, but we're meant to enjoy on a transcendental platform, not on the material platform that we are trying to enjoy. So when we do devotional service, we feel this love, this attachment. We give something to someone, it feels good. And a lot of people feel this in the world. A lot of people who are not necessarily religious or even very spiritual, they just know that it feels good when you do something for someone. That's why there are professions like nurses and doctors and people that help, teachers. But the problem is, in this material world, is people are addressing this love, but they don't know exactly where to send it. They're trying to find it. They're serving one another because our nature is to serve Krishna, but we don't know exactly how to go about it. So it's a lot like writing a letter or sending a parcel. If we don't have the correct address on the envelope, it's not going to reach the destination. So we have this love in our heart. Love is the letter. Love is the parcel that we're sending to Krishna. We're sending devotional service. And if we don't have the address on the letter, it doesn't reach Krishna. So it's very important. We have to have the proper address. And first, we need to have faith. We at least need to have faith that the person we're sending the letter to actually exists. Writing a letter and sending it off to Santa Claus, right, when we're children. I don't know, in America we do this. We write letters to Santa Claus around Christmas time. I've been very good. Please send me this and this and this. Some of us send the same kind of letters to Krishna. I've been very good. Please send me this and this and this. Please send me this toy and that toy. But these letters end up at the post office in a big pile. And every year, in America, they ask for volunteers, and hundreds of people volunteer to just read these letters and answer as many as they can. But they're not really Santa Claus. The letters are just in big piles, and it's actually quite a problem for the Postal Service. They have these big piles of letters that they don't know what to do with. You know, and all these poor children, they have their hopes up so high, you know, and they've been told by the people they trust and love the most in the world that Santa Claus exists, and send him a letter and he'll get it and he'll answer. And he won't. He won't answer. Krishna hears their prayers. Krishna may give some answer, but it may not be the train or the doll that they were asking for, you know. So their love is there, the intent is there, but the address is wrong. So we learn the address. We direct these prayers. We direct our devotional service, our bhakti, our love. We direct this to Krishna. We have the proper address. But once the letter arrives to the proper destination, what happens with the letter? The letter's opened and the letter is discarded. If there's nothing in the letter, what's the purpose? There has to be devotional emotion. There has to be love. We have to feel these powerful feelings. If we don't have feelings for Krishna, then the letter's empty. He receives an empty letter. Nice you were thinking about me, but I don't know what you're trying to say. He needs our love. He needs these feelings. So we have these feelings. They're very, very important. And the more that we feel for Krishna, the more we are inclined to serve him, because he starts to really become the center of our love. He becomes the object of our love, the object of our desire. And when that happens, we lose focus of all other things that were distracting us. And we only want to serve Krishna. We lose track of everything else because he becomes number one, and we can't think of anything else. We start to become obsessed with our love, with our desire. And when that happens, and we start performing more service with this real feeling of love, then our love increases. This is an eternal process. In this world, we see things, they get better to a point. Flowers grow to a point, then they die. Our love increases for a person to a point. But it's all finite. In the spiritual world, everything is infinite, and it increases eternally. Can you imagine? This love for Krishna, this little taste that we get once in a while in this world, increases eternally. It will never stop. That's why it's the greatest love. It's not just that Krishna is greater than everything else. It's not just that he's the creator of everything. It's that our love for him increases and increases beyond imagine. How can we even begin to understand the love that we have for Krishna, or that he has for us, when we've chosen to leave and go somewhere else? We left the spiritual world. We wanted to come to this playground. We wanted to come and take a carnival ride. And it's not that great. The rides here are not that great, and they're short. And how can we even imagine? So this is the process. This is how we can get past that in this world. And what increases our love even more for Krishna is when we pass that same principle on to someone else who doesn't know. So many fallen souls in this world, like all of us, we're all here. We all had the mercy of hearing from a devotee at some point in our life that we should take a different practice. I spent years alone in the mountains because I thought that's what I should do. I started reading the Bhagavatam, and I thought, because of the stories I heard, that I should walk away into the forest and never come back. After about 3.5 years, I started to realize that what I really needed was devotional service and association. That's the real thing. That's what we need. So I had some great moments alone with Krishna. Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Sri Lakshman Hanuman Sitaram Ki Jai. And I had it made. Nobody was telling me what to do. I mean, I had to get up and feed my horses every day and take care of the horses. I had a lot of work, and it was a kind of a hard lifestyle, but nobody told me what to do. I could spend all day picking wildflowers for Krishna. I could get up in the morning and chant. I could read for hours. I read every single night. I had a pretty good method of reading when it was cold. I was in the snow a lot. And so I would sit by the fire and I would read at night. I'd read the Bhagavatam and I would let the fire die down and I would read as long as I could until I was too cold. And then I'd be frozen in position from reading. And then I would put my books away and I would go to bed. And it was great. I had all, you know, I had everything. But I started to have this overwhelming feeling like I just needed to be sharing it with someone. And so it was really difficult for me. When I left my camp, especially in the winter, when I left my camp in the winter, I had to snowshoe all night to get to where I could take off my snowshoes and actually ride my horses. And by the time I ever got down to town, it was usually about midday. And when I got to the temple, because while I was in the mountains, someone came and built a temple where I lived. Someone actually built a temple around my home. It was amazing. And when I found out, I went there and I wanted to do service. And when I got to the temple, well, they didn't like me. They were afraid of me. I had really long hair and a string of horses behind me. I looked like an outlaw, and they didn't know that I'd been chanting and reading the Bhagavatam, and they didn't know anything about me. They just didn't like me, and they really didn't like my horses. So they wouldn't let me put my horses there. It was a farm. It was a farm temple. And they said, no, we have no room for you to tie your horses here. We don't want your horses taking up space on our farm. So next to the temple was an old junkyard where they have a lot of old wrecked cars. And so I found a place that was hidden away in the junkyard where I could tie my horses during the day, and I hid my horses there. And I went to the temple and I asked, without my horses, if I could do some service. And they let me wash the pots for Govinda's restaurant. And at night, because it was so hard to get back and forth to my camp, I would stay in town for a few days at a time. So at night, I would go back to the junkyard next door and I slept under an old truck out of the storm. It was snowing a lot that time of year. And that's how I stayed at the temple. They wouldn't let me stay. They wouldn't give me a place. They wouldn't even let me put my horses there. And it was really difficult. And I'm thinking, why did I leave my paradise home in the mountains to come down here and do this? But I couldn't help it. I could have left. The first day I was so angry and hurt. Krishna, you brought me here and then you slapped me in the face. Why did you do this? But I couldn't leave. There was something about it like a magnet that I just needed to go and do this. And even the verbal abuse that I took was actually, it was like enlightening. At the end of the day, I just felt good and I couldn't explain it. no one ever really taught me these things, so I didn't really know what was happening. But I kept going back, and I kept doing service there. So sometimes when we feel inspired to give service to Krishna, we put ourselves in a situation that's very hard, it's very difficult. It's been a pattern for me. I've been doing it ever since. I mean, this hasn't been easy for us to be here at this temple. No one treats me bad. Everybody treats me really good here. I really love the devotees here at this temple. But it's still, there's some difficulties for us to be here. And it should give me a lot of distress, but it inspires me. I feel challenged, and I feel like this is the reward Krishna is giving me. I mean, think about your service that you do. We all have some service that we do, and there's times when we're not happy with what we're doing, right? There's times it's just difficult. But at the end of the day, when we had an obstacle and we figured out what we had to do and we didn't give up, and we did serve Krishna, think about the feeling you have when you're going to bed at night. The feeling when you wake up in the morning and you're so in love with Krishna, you can't wait to get out of bed and take a cold shower and come through the rain and come into a cold temple and worship Krishna. And you can't wait to do those things. This is something non-devotees can't understand. It's interesting. On the life membership card that they hand out if someone becomes a life member, usually you become a member of a club and you're entitled to certain things, right? And then it'll say sometimes on the card, you're entitled to this or you're entitled to that. On the life membership card, it says you're entitled to do service at any ISKCON temple. This is great. People are paying thousands of dollars so that they can go and work for free. You know, non-devotees just can't understand this concept. But we can. Anyone who's done it. Anyone who's ever done it. We have this overwhelming feeling of love to serve Krishna. Why? Because we're in love. We're obsessed with Krishna. We forget. So we try to find it in all the other ways. We look for other things to love. We look for other things to do. We have to serve. We don't have any choice. We're going to be serving someone. We either are serving our own desires or we are serving Krishna's desires. We're like the crazy genie that's been released from the lamp. That's our mentality, and it has to be engaged. If we don't engage ourselves, we just run amok. We're not happy at all. We have to serve. So I was serving my horses, and I was building fires, and I was looking for food, and I was doing these different things, and I wasn't happy. But when I was serving devotees at a temple, even though they didn't like me, and I didn't really like them, but they're devotees of Krishna. They were chanting the holy name. They're deserving of worship. And I was serving Krishna through serving these devotees. And I became happy. I never really had a peaceful existence at that temple. I lived there for several years, and I accomplished a lot of things, especially within myself. And they never really did like me very much, but I was still very happy, because I was serving Krishna. And we become addicted to that. So not only did Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda increase their devotional service, but those in their association also increased in devotional service. So for me, after some time begging and praying for Krishna to give me more, give me service, give me devotees. There really weren't any devotees at the temple where I lived. There were only three of us in the beginning. the couple that started the temple and me. And there weren't very many devotees. Preaching was ecstatic. We had hundreds of thousands of visitors every year. At some of our festivals, we had 80,000 people per day. And all of the work was done by volunteers. So engaging all of these people to help do the service there was an ecstatic practice. It was really enlightening for me, and I really enjoyed it. But I was begging for association with devotees, and I ended up on the Polish tour with Indradyumna Swami. And the devotees that are there are so dedicated. They're so... They give up their summer vacations, and they spend all of the money they have, and they ride on these horrible Russian trains for so long to get to where they're going, and then they work so hard in the rain. And when it stops raining, it's unbearably hot. They work all day long, and then they ride the bus for hours, and they go back, and they're packed into these little rooms just like sardines. And it was overwhelming to me. I have never seen anyone work so hard and suffer so much and be so happy. And it must be a little what the residents of Vrindavan felt when they saw Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj serving Krishna with such love and affection. Because I was not like that. I was complaining. I was cold, and I was hungry, and I didn't understand a lot of things, you know. But just their association, I developed so much affection for Krishna. And from that, eventually, I learned to serve Krishna as if he was my child, giving him love and affection. Sometimes it's really difficult. A child's screaming. When the child's sick, you feel distress. When they hurt, you feel pain. They need to be fed, and they need to be clothed. They need to be cared for. You have to wake up at the middle of the night, even when you haven't had any sleep, to care for them. But that's where the affection comes from. So if we can take a little bit of this example of the residents of Vraj and follow in their footsteps, we're not always going to be having a great day. Sometimes we're going to be unhappy with what we're doing, but we're going to have a lot of really great nights when we go to sleep at night and dream about our service and dream about Krishna. And we're going to increase in our devotional service. And when our devotional service increases, our love for Krishna is going to increase. And we're going to get up the next day, and we're going to be hungry to do it again. And every morning that we chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Please, Krishna, please give me the pleasure of devotional service. It's going to increase, and it's going to increase to where we can't stop, to where there is no other happiness. And in that way, we are going to feel real transcendental bliss in this world. We don't have to wait. The weather's not going to change. It's going to be cold. It's going to be hot. It's going to be wet. It's going to be dry. We can't do anything about it. We can't control who likes us and who doesn't like us and what kind of things they might say, and we can't change what kind of things they might think or the misunderstandings that come up in this material world. We can't change the fact that material things deteriorate and fall apart. And sometimes it creates a real problem. We can't change those things. But if we have the attitude that these are all gifts that enable us to be closer to Krishna, then we're going to be happy. We can find happiness in this world. It's just that simple. Hare Krishna.